So this week is it's Purim. Still Shushan Purim here, where I am. And although it's Parshas Shemini and there's much to say about Shemini and the death of Nadav and Avihu, I just want to say something about Purim. I think in the past, maybe 5 years ago, we were learning this Torah, but I feel like it's time to learn it again. The Gemara Megillah says, Rabbi Yochanan opened up when he was teaching about the story of Purim. He would begin with this verse from Psalm 98. Zochar chasdoi ve'emunosoi lebeis Yisrael. He remembers his loving kindness and his faith with the house of Israel. Ro'u kol afsei oretz. All the corners of the earth saw as Yeshua Selekenu, the salvation of God. When did all the corners, the spread out places, the furthermost places in the world, when did they see God's salvation? Bimei Mordechai v'Esther. So there was something special about that moment in history. So the Ishbitz explains, why is it called Yeshua Selekenu, the salvation, or God's salvation? We could actually read it as the salvation of God. Could have just spoken about the salvation of the Jews. So he says that Yeshua Selekenu, when we talk about divine salvation, we are talking in a double entendre. You know, that we are saved, but also the divine is saved. Because the salvation that we're experiencing is the kind of salvation that is eternal. It's not just a momentary thing. It's not just, oh, we've been saved for now. But it's much deeper. So how can we talk about a salvation that goes deeper when you know, we see that history is a kind of revolving wheel, and we go up and we go down, and we haven't yet recovered from the 6 million that Haman managed to destroy and uproot. So what does it mean, this, when we talk about an eternal salvation, Yeshua Selekenu, a salvation of God? The verse says in Isaiah 45, Yisrael noisha b'Hashem, that Israel's salvation is in God, teshua soilomim. It is a salvation of all the world. So again, that when the Jewish people are saved, it's not just the Jewish people who are being saved, but this world and the next world and all worlds are being saved. So he brings, the Ishbitzer brings a Gemara. The Gemara, it's a Gemara Chulin. The Gemara says, and we talked about it in Sefer Yetzirah as well. The Gemara says, "Homon min haTorah minay." Where is there a hint in the Torah to Homon? So the Gemara answers, "Shenema." It's written in Bereshis, in the Genesis, right in the third chapter. Hamin ha'etz asher tzivisicha lebilti yachom imenu achalta. Have you eaten from the tree from which I commanded you not to eat? Hamin ha'etz, from that tree. So the word hamin, the Gemara says, read it Haman. So there is a hint to Haman in the Torah. Hamin ha'etz, from the tree. Actually, the real translation is of, can it be that from the tree that I commanded you not to eat, you have eaten? Then the Gemara goes on to say, Esther min haTorah minayin. Where is there a hint to Esther in the Torah? And the Gemara brings the pasuk. And on that day, you're going to ask yourself, like, what's happening? Things are so bad. And on that day, Vanoichi haster astir. On that day, I'm going to hide. I'm going to surely hide my face from you, says God. So the word, the phrase is haster astir. Haster Astir is Esther. So then the Gemara asks, Mordechai min haTorah minay? So where is there a hint to Mordechai in the Torah? Shenema, it's written, V'atakach lecho b'somim roish, God, when he's commanding us to make the incense that was sacrificed in the Mishkan, in the tabernacle, he says, take b'somim roish. B'somim are spices, roish, of those little heads of spices, and the Targum, the Aramaic Targum of B'somim Roish is, so then the Pasuk says, B'somim Roish Mar Dror, Mar is Myrrh, and the Medrash says, the Targum translates Mar Dror as Morodachio, pure Myrrh. Morodachio, you could read it as Mordechai. So, it's an interesting Gemara, and it would just be a very the Gemara is trying to make connections, you know? I mean, this is interesting. The Gemara says, where's there a hint to Moshe in the Torah, right? So, I mean, half the Torah talks about Moshe. Where's there a hint to Haman in the Torah? The Ishbitz says, not such a simple, it's not just an agada, it's not just a play on words that you could read Hamin as Haman. This is the way God set up the world. Is if you looked out into the world and you could see God, if you could look out into the world and see that you're in the presence of the divine, there really wouldn't be any place for you. The free will wouldn't really have a meaning, because if everything that you could do, you could see in front of you the divine, and you could see the divine desire, and you know, you could be face to face with God all the time, you wouldn't be looking at what you have in your hand, right? You know, if you stand in front of God and he gives you something, you know, you don't start counting what he's given you. You know, you keep your face glued to the divine face, right? So if we were face to face with God all the time, there wouldn't really be room for us and our individual ego and personality. So God hides his face, which means that God allows us to have the illusion that we have free will, and that we are individuals, and that even though if you were looking from space with non-human eyes, you might see the whole world and this biosphere as just this humming of electrons and atoms and stuff. And, you know, when you look with human eyes, you see this beautiful blue sphere with the mountains and snow and clouds and water, and then land with people on it. But that's only because you're looking through human eyes, right? So God hides himself through human eyes. And so we have the ability to look at ourselves and to think of ourselves as individual. Nevertheless, if we look through ourselves, it's obvious that we're transparent to God, that inside us is the divine. So what does God do? He takes it to the next level. He hides his hiddenness. He hides his hiddenness so that a person can actually look at himself and fail to see the divine, and look into himself and think to himself, I'm not connected to the divine. And a person can look at the things that he's done and interpret them in such a way that they are devoid of anything holy. And a person is capable of looking at his whole life and saying to himself, you know, I'm a failure. It wasn't worth being born. I was better off not being born. All I've done is taken these gifts that I was given and I've misused them, and the net total of my life is a deficit. The truth is, as we've been learning, as we've learned again and again, for years upon years, as we learn Ishbit Satoira, that is an illusion. Because the truth is that even from Haman, something good comes, right? And not just because he begat Reb Shmuel Bashilas, you know, who teaches Torah, but from Haman himself, we get the Megillah, we get Purim. What would Purim be without Haman, right? What would Pesach be without Paroi? So, it's not possible for anything to happen from which the glory of God isn't possible. Nevertheless, a person can still operate under the illusion that they've messed up. Now the Gemara says, the Gemara in Megillah, the students asked Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, what did the Jews in the days of Haman do so bad that they deserved to be destroyed, man, woman, and child? The original plan of Haman and Achashverosh, Lahashmid, Laharig, Laabed is Kala Yehudim, to destroy, to cut off, to finish all the Jews, Minav Ad Zokin, from young to old, Taf Venoshim, babies and women. And one day, and all the 127 kingdoms and principalities of the Persian Empire. What did the Jews do to deserve such a thing? So Reb Shimon Bar Yochai said to his students, "Nu, you answer the question. What do you think?" So they said, you know, maybe because the Jews enjoyed this Seuda, that when the Megillah opens in the seventh year of Achashverosh's reign, he makes this great feast that goes on for 6 months. And then, you know, and to that feast, all the kings and potentates were all invited. And then, when that was finished, he made a feast for the Jews for the people of Shushan. And apparently, Shushan was full of Jews, like New York. And everybody in Shushan was invited to this feast for 7 days. And because we went to the feast, we deserved to die. My stomach was treif, and the wine was Yain Nesach, and the place was full of all kinds of sins. So Reb Shimon Bar Yochai says that would make sense, except then the Gezeira, the decree, should only have fallen on the Jews of Shushan. Why then were all the Jews from all over the world, from India to Ethiopia, why should they all die just because the Jews of Shushan transgressed and enjoyed the feast of Achashverosh? So the student said to him, "Nu, Rebbe, so you tell us." So he said, because in the days of Nebuchadnezzar, who was two kings before Achashverosh, the Jews bowed down, the Jewish people bowed down to an idol. So the student said, "No, if that's the case, Rebbe, why did we deserve to be saved?" So Reb Shimon Bar Yochai says, because we didn't really bow down. In our hearts, we didn't really bow down. We just looked like it. Leponim, on the face of things, it looked as though the Jews had bowed down. But the truth was that in our hearts, we never really bowed to any tzelem, to any idol. So the Ishbitz is a very interesting reading. He says like this. Reb Shimon Bar Yochai is not saying that we bow down to an idol in the days of Nebuchadnezzar. You know, there were times before the destruction of the first temple when it seems like everybody was bowing down to idols, and it was like it was a cottage industry, you know, like making idols, and everywhere was idols. The Ishbitzer says what Rav Shimon bar Yochai means is that in the days of Nebuchadnezzar, the Jewish people sank to such a level of despair that the Jewish people thought, that we had cut ourselves off from Judaism, we had cut ourselves off from the Torah, we had abandoned God. And even though we felt that desperately that we wanted to connect with God, but the destruction of the temple and the physical rigors of being dragged in chains naked to Babylon and seeing the complete uprooting of everything that we believed and trusted in, we thought to ourselves that we were finished, that we had done something so bad that we didn't deserve to exist, and that we had cut ourselves off, that we ourselves had initiated a decoupling from the divine, and that our holiness was gone, and that our neshama had flown back to its source, and all we were left with was this body corrupt and the yetzer hara, the evil desires, and that we as human beings were no longer capable of reconnecting with God, that we'd spoiled it, we'd broken something, and that we were inevitably going to degenerate and just disappear into history like other nations, and that we weren't tied to God anymore because we had broken the connection, and there was nothing that we could do to fix that connection. And the Ishbitzer says, how dare you think that way? What on earth could prompt a person to think such a thing? Because thinking along those lines, if you take that to its ultimate, if you follow that logic to the end, what it means is that God created us for a bad purpose, to a bad end. Or even if God created us for a good purpose, but it's possible to ruin God's creation, and that it's possible to thwart God's purpose in his kavanah, and that it's possible for a human being to undo the work of God and to ruin it. And the Ishbitzer says, what on earth could make you think such a thing? The Gemara in Ervin says, Noyach loy la'odam shaloy nivra mishinivra. So there was a time when the great sages all found themselves together in a room, and they quickly did a count and they took a vote. The question, there was a debate, is it easier to be born or not to be born? Is it easier to be created or not to be created? And they did a count, they took a vote, and they decided that it's easier not to be created than to be created. Now, what should you do? You're created. You better get on and do as many good deeds as you can. So the Ishbitzer says, look very carefully at what the Talmud says. It doesn't say there was a debate about whether it's better to be born or not. There's no debate about whether it's better to be born. Of course it's better to be born. If God created you, then it's a good thing. Is it easier to be born or not to be born? Huh? It's easier not to. Because To be born is to enter into the world of doubt. So the Chachamim, the sages, weren't debating that. Of course it's better to be born. Toiv loy la'odam, for sure. Noyach loy, is it easier? No, it's not noyach. No. It's not comfortable. So, if everybody's agreed, toiv loy, that it's good to be born, it's good to be created, so how could the Yidden in the time of Haman think to themselves, we have thwarted God's good plan, we've ruined ourselves, we've made a mess of creation, and we are no longer capable under our own power of reconnecting to the divine in any meaningful, lasting way, and essentially, we've messed up. So what are we saying? The Ishbitzer says. What does that really mean about Jewish philosophy, Jewish philosophers, rabbinics, or whatever we want to think of, however we want to think of it? What kind of leadership did the Jewish people have that their leaders would agree with such a thing? Because what does that imply? What does that imply? When we think about God, if we take it to the logical conclusion that God created a human being so that he could impute that person's fall to sin, that God created people so that he could whack them with a double whammy because they messed up, what does that say about the God that I believe in that I could think such a thing? That God would create somebody so that, so 5 people out of the 100, they're good and they're going to get reward. The other 95 people, they're going to get smacked because they ruined everything. So what are we saying? That God's powerless to make good people? If I take that thought and I use it as a basis for a religion, or use it as the basis for a society or a worldview, I get such a cynical picture. Of course, we've been living with this cynical picture now for thousands of years since the beginning of Christianity and before that, and now we get this with Islam, even to the nth degree. What really says is that God creates people, and people are free to do what they want, good or evil. And, there are good people and they're going to get rewarded, but the bad people, they're going to go to hell. They go, So, essentially, that kind of thinking posits as a given that God creates a human being for the sole purpose of being the background for the good people. And those human beings who don't get to be called good people, they get punished or they somehow... But their purpose is no more than to be like the blurred background against which the good people can be. And so then they can be wiped off from the chalkboard of history at best, or punished for all eternity at worst. And the Ishbitzer says that's mamash, that's absolutely, categorically the opposite of what we believe. We believe toiv loy la'odam shenivra, it is good to be born. That God says, Heshi, I made you. You have to trust that it's going to work out. You have to trust me that it's going to be good. That your life, at the end of your life, Heshi, you're going to say thank you. That it was worth it. And not it was worth it because, you had lots of chocolate and a nice car. But that it's worth it because at the end, you're going to look at your life and I'm going to show you, I'll take you through it step by step, and you'll see how it has been a worthwhile life. Good. That good will come of it. And then after you've passed on, and you will have a reward. And you'll see how it has been a terrible, trying life, and it's been full of fear and uncertainty and doubt, but I'll show you clearly that through it there was a thread, and that thread was the connection to me, and it was never lost, it was never even jeopardized. And you'll smile and you say, thank you. And I will reward you because you never knew. And you went through this life thinking, oi, I'm messing up, but I'm going to try and do better. And oi, I messed up again. No, I'm not going to give up. I'm going to try more. And because you were always under the belief that you're messing up, but you're going to be trying, there'll be a reward, as though it was really possible to mess up and you did well. And I'll say thank you. So now the Ishbitzi says, let's look at the Gemara. The Gemara says, where is there a hint to Haman in the Torah? And it brings the Pasuk, Hamin ha'etz, can it be from the tree that I commanded you not to eat, you have eaten? So the Ishbitzi says, the question that God is asking Adam, it's not, have you eaten from the tree or haven't you eaten from the tree? His question is, do you think, is that really what you believe, that you could eat from a tree that I commanded you not to, and that thereby you could disobey the one command that I gave you, and that you could ruin something that I made, and that you could destroy something in yourself that I had created? Is that what you believe, Adam? That in a sense, God is challenging Adam, and he's saying to Adam, do you believe that I would create you for a bad purpose, to a wicked end, to punishment and degradation? You think that's why I created you with my hands? What kind of image of God are you walking around with in your head? What kind of a God is this that you believe in? The God that would allow you to cut yourself off by doing something so terrible that you would now be finished and that you would be punished and that you would now no longer be this creature that I made with my hands? Hamin ha'etz, do you think that you could eat from the tree and so do an avera if that was not what I wanted you to do? So the real sin that Adam commits is not eating from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, but it is then looking at himself and saying to myself, Gewalt, I've ruined it. I, with my own power, have destroyed God's creation. I, with my own deed, have severed my connection to the divine. I, with my avera, with my sin, have corrupted myself and made myself tamei and unclean in a way that I can never fix and I can never undo this evil that I've done. That's Adam's sin, not the eating. Not the eating from the tree, that wasn't the sin. It is in then thinking of himself as being irredeemable. And the logical conclusion of that, if I follow that train of thought, is if I'm irredeemable, says Adam, then God made something for an irredeemable purpose to whack it with a double whammy. That is really pagan. That is really an unclean thought. And that's the question that God says to Adam. Is that you really believe that? And the Gemara says, that's the Haman. Haman min ha-Torah minayim is that Hamin ha-Eitz, because that's Haman. The Haman inside us is the one who keeps on trying to talk us into that kind of thinking, that there's something we could do or that we have already done that could sever our connection to the divine and make our life in retrospect as a worthless endeavor, something that should never have happened and would be better off not being born. That's Haman. And so the Gemara then goes on to say, Nu, Esther min ha-Torah min ha-Ayin. And he has to ask you on that day, God says, not just I will hide myself, I will hide the fact that I've hidden myself. That's the meaning of Esther. So, what's the cure? The cure is Mordechai lo yichra v'lo yishtachve. Mordechai refuses to bow, refuses to curtsy, refuses to genuflect, v'leikom v'lo yizomimenu. He doesn't get up in front of Haman, he doesn't tremble in Haman's presence. Mordechai. Mordechai is the purest incense. And you know, inside every Jew, there's Mordechai. And there's part of us has this power of not being in the least bit moved by Haman. And we don't bow to Haman. And we don't even acknowledge, the way Mordechai doesn't even acknowledge that Haman has any status whatsoever, that we can let this thought, the Haman thought, pass through us without indulging it in any way or giving it any power, not trembling in front of it and not bowing to it. Gurnisht, nothing. And that is the triumph. So the reason, this is the Ishbitzer reading of the Talmud of Reb Shimon bar Yochai, you know why the Jews deserved to be destroyed in the day of Haman? Because they believed that they had done something that you know, was so severe, was so final, was so terrible. Because if I follow that thought, it means that God is terrible, that he would allow us to do such a thing. And, you know, that is the meaning of paganism, to believe that God would make us, and that there would be anything in God that would be evil, or that would create a human being with all the years of suffering that a human being has to go through just to make his daily bread, with all the doubts that a human being has about their own integrity, with all the burdens of humanity and the choices that a person is faced with on a day-to-day basis just to maintain their integrity, that God would create human beings and those who don't make the grade, you know, just, well, you are worthless. I mean, to believe that God would do such a thing is ultimate paganism. So that's the meaning of Reb Shimon bar Yochai when he says that they bow down to the idol in the days of Nebuchadnezzar. Because that's the ultimate bowing down to the idol, is to believe such a thing about God. And so, now, when we look at the Nes of Purim, when we look at the great miracle of Purim, what we are looking at is that it became clear to us at that time that Yeshua Selekenu, that this was a salvation. We realized that judgmental part of us, that Gevura, that Elikim, which is inside us, is also saved, is also good, is also full of integrity. And that, yes, I live in a world in which that question, you know, did I eat? I don't know, did I eat? Have I ruined things? Yes, that's a legitimate question. A person has to tremble all their life and ask themselves, you know, am I decent? Am I? But I must never answer no. I must never answer the question no. Because when the question arises, I have to ask myself, no, so why did God make me? God made me for a good purpose. All right, so let me look again at myself and see what's the good purpose that God had in mind. And when I do, when I look at myself and I search myself, then in doing so, I break through the hastir astir. I break through the hiddenness. And I find inside myself that even at the moment when I did my worst sin, at that very moment, there was a part of me that was still attached to the divine. And in fact, I was misinterpreting my own signals. And part of me was worshiping the divine. And that part of me which turned it into an action took a wrong action. But inside myself, I'm always connected. And when we realize that as Jewish people, and it took us hundreds of years till we figured it out, until Reb Shimon bar Yochai teaches it to us, that in actual fact, you know, there's this salvation that is there from the moment of creation, that God says, I'm never going to let you fail, because otherwise I wouldn't create you. I'm creating you for good. Trust me.